Welcome to Beyond Beauty, where we uncover the remarkable stories behind the extraordinary women artists in the world of art and culture. I'm Jacqueline Cofield, your host. Join us as we explore the diverse landscapes of artistic expression, shining a light on the voices that often go unheard and the perspectives that redefine beauty and knowledge. From Nigeria to Brazil, from India to Jamaica, we celebrate the rich tapestry of creativity that transcends borders and challenges conventions. Through insightful conversations and captivating narratives, we invite you to immerse yourself in the stories of courageous women who dare to dream, create, and inspire. And I'm thrilled to introduce today's guest, Ifani Awachie. It feels like fate brought us together, and I'll share why in a moment. Ifani is an incredibly talented multidisciplinary artist whose work showcases a diverse range across different mediums, including painting, installation, and photography. I can't wait to dive into our conversation and learn more about her creative journey. Let's go. I'm so excited about my guest today, Ifani Awachie. I feel like we were destined to meet, and I'll get into that in a second. And amazing, talented, multidisciplinary artist. So we're just going to jump right in. Actually, no, I want to address how we met. Because I had a friend, a colleague here in my cohort who was telling me about you. And then you and I both went to see a lecture by Christina Sharp and Saidiya Hartman here at Columbia. And so you were up here on campus, and coincidentally, we were sitting right next to each other.
Yeah, exactly.
What brought you to that event?
Well, I love Christina Sharp's work. Of course, like everyone else, probably I read In the Wake when it came out and was just so struck by her use of language to reframe how we think about Blackness and specifically how we think about the afterlife of slavery, to borrow from Saidiya Hartman's work. And, you know, the event, I mean, the way that it was curated really spoke to me because I couldn't believe we would have the chance to experience a reading from Sharp and then also basically take a class with her or have a workshop with her or a seminar with her.
It was so great.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, I was just kind of like in awe just to be in the room with the two of them at the same time. And like, it was just really such a wonderful treat. I was like, you know, this is one of the blessings of doing your doctorate in New York City, you know?
And yeah.
I mean, I have to sometimes like remind myself of these blessings. You know, we're surrounded by so many amazing scholars, so many amazing Black women scholars, and you know, so it's just incredible. So I was sitting right next to you, and I think it was your shoes. You had like these interesting shoes, and I just like started chatting with you, and I'm like, wait a minute, like I was supposed to meet you, like so one of my one of my classmates was just telling me about you like 2 days ago.
So, it was meant to be.
Yes, really meant to be. So I'm so excited. Yeah, you know, I'm actually going to start in on this question because you are doing your doctorate at NYU, New York University, Tisch School of the Arts. Yeah. And I don't know if you know this, but I am an alum of NYU, Tisch School of the Arts Film School.
Right. I think you mentioned that that day, and that's such a great program. So that's
I did my undergrad there. So I was so excited to see that you're there and you were teaching this class. Is it over? You're still teaching it right now. You were teaching this class that you designed called Contemporary African and Black Diasporic Filmmaking this summer.
So can it's starting next. Yeah, for sure. It's actually starting next month. It's in like the latter half of the summer sessions at NYU. But yeah, I'm really excited to be teaching it. I really thought that, or I thought for a long time that the way that African film is taught, it often focuses on the kind of the canon of African cinema. It's a lot of like Francophone African art films, and it's kind of the classics from a certain period. You know, it's Ousmane Sembé, it's A Black Girl, it's Touki Bouki. It's like, I started to get this feeling as I was looking at curricula and like film programs, African film programs, that, you know, of course, you always want to introduce audiences to African film by addressing, you know, the history and kind of the great works that have been made. But I started feeling like it's always the same. It's always the usual suspects. It's always kind of the same films that are taught and shown. And screened, and it's often fathers of African cinema who are the focus. It's often like films, again, from this particular time. And I just thought there's so many amazing films, especially right now, kind of making the festival circuit, being installed in video installations in museums, and being circulated in other ways that are being made by women that often have like, or that sometimes have like a queer narrative or a queer politic, that have a feminist politic, and that really show that Africa, it does not just exist in the past, it's in the contemporary period. And that's a simple idea that I've been really passionate about since I first started kind of trying to occupy a position of mediating understandings of Africa for the public. And I can say more about that maybe later on. But yeah, I just wanted to really teach some of the films that I was really excited about under the banner of African film. I wanted to say, like, this is African film too. It's Martine Sims, The African Desperate, which is talking about the African diaspora in a particular way. It's this amazing film, Sleda, by Jessica Janaeus, that premiered last year. I don't know if it premiered at the African Film Festival here, but that was where I saw it. And that was one of the first screenings. That film being a film from Haiti, which is such an important part of the diaspora, to see a story set in Haiti from the perspective of these strong women protagonists, and to have so much to talk about in relation to that film in terms of the cinematography and the rich visual story that's being told. I was just like, we need to talk about these films too, you know?
I love it. I mean, I feel like you're the perfect person to do that, not only because of like your scholarly pedigree, but also because you yourself are a filmmaker. You made a film that also was in festival circuit, This Thing Is Not For You. Can you talk about that film? It looks so interesting. I was watching some of the like trailer on your Instagram.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes. So This Thing Is Not For You is a film that I made in, well, between 2020 and 2022. I was working on the film and I got the chance to make it. I have to say their name and give credit to this amazing pair of women behind a production company based in Texas called Watts Productions. They hold a script writing contest every year, and I won the contest in 2020. And as a result, they funded my entire film. From production to editing. Yeah. And they're setting out to kind of, in an interesting way, similarly to my course, they're trying to tell a different story about Blackness through the films that they make and through the films that they support. They say that for each film they make, they're going to make one for someone else. So they're incredible. And the film for me started even before then. I wrote the script around 2017. And I was inspired by two things. I was inspired by my family and conversations that we have intergenerationally about things like our Nigerian culture, but also about being in America and dealing with race and the particular position from which we deal with race as Nigerian Americans. And even within that, we're all Nigerian American, but you know, my parents have a different position for me as immigrants. I have a different position from both them and my siblings as someone who immigrated at a very young age. I came to the States when I was a year and a half after, you know, I was born in Nigeria. And then my siblings have a different position as people who were born here, who are Nigerian and American. So I was thinking about that. Ta-Nehisi Coates' article on reparations had just dropped. You know, I remember at the time, you know, reparations is such a buzzword now, but at the time it was almost controversial that he was making a case for reparations, to use the title of his essay in The Atlantic.
Well, they are due.
They are absolutely due. Yeah. And I love that it's such a, it's becoming a more and more embraced and accepted idea. I think it makes so much sense, economic reparations. And so, yeah, those two kind of things came together in this film, which basically sees a family grappling with this question of reparations in a time when, in the near future, and it's interesting because I didn't think of the film as speculative at the time, but as it's been circulating in festivals and things like this, some of the feedback, some of the words that have been used to describe the film are speculative, for example. And so it's speculative in the sense that I imagine the time in the future, in the near future, when we as a nation have finally elected a Black woman president. And I thought that would be the kind of president who might actually finally find a way to enact reparations. And so we see a Nigerian American family in this time grappling with what this means for them. And it leads them to grapple more broadly with, like, what does it mean for us to be Nigerian in America? And what does it mean to grapple with the differences that we have even within this family, among ourselves, you know? And so it stirs up all these questions for them. And you kind of see them over the course of the weekend, where the youngest daughter in the family is graduating from high school. You see them kind of deal with all these things.
Wow. I've been studying Black Intellectual Thought with Dr. Cornel West for the last year. And when you were just talking about that, I was immediately thinking about Lorraine Hansberry. And yeah, I mean, it was like definitely speaking to A Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to see that. So after this, I'm going to have to find out where we can see that. But I want to kind of go back and think about sort of your, how this all came to be. So thinking back to your educational experiences and your artistic practice and thinking about, were there any particular events or experiences or persons in your childhood educational experience that influenced your decision or your proclivity towards the arts?
You know what? It's interesting. I deeply wish that I could name, you know, the kinds of like Black feminist artists and thinkers that I respect so much now. But when I was growing up, I was really inspired by the White Canon. Thinking about it now, you know, like one, so my background is in writing. I come to film through writing. I come to film as a writer. And even in the study of film, I think a lot about watching films as close reading, which I learned as, you know, in being trained as an English major in undergrad. And before that, you know, I first started writing by like trying to copy Emily Dickinson's work. And I was really inspired by Walt Whitman's Song of Myself, I believe it's called. And I think that speaks to, you know, the whiteness of our education system in this country. I was not exposed to the Black literature that I've come to now. I mean, we're just talking about writers like Christina Sharp and Saidiya Hartman, whose Lose Your Mother inspired me and taught me so much about Blackness. Later on, as I was coming into my own Blackness, I wasn't taught Audre Lorde Sammy, which was so inspiring for me, just in terms of form, not to mention, you know, in the way that it deals with like a queer coming, not coming of age, but a queer coming into self narrative for Black women. So yeah, I mean, I was really kind of ushered into writing and literature through kind of some of these canonical kind of figures. I also want to mention that I made the choice to seriously pursue the arts in a way that feels a bit late. I decided to take the arts seriously as kind of a path after college, right? And that was partly because in my Nigerian family, it wasn't encouraged as a path. And for some listeners, this is going to be a tale as old as time, no matter if you're Nigerian or Black or just a first generation immigrant from another background. My parents didn't see that as a viable path, right? And so I kind of chose the path that I went down in spite of that. But yeah, I think as I was at that critical juncture between kind of the end of my undergrad education and entering the professional world, I feel it's important to mention I went to Yale. So I started toward the end of my time there hanging out around the art school with an amazing kind of group of Black artists who were studying there and have gone on to do amazing things. And between kind of attending crits there and starting to go to programming at the Yale Art Gallery because they were finally starting to program artists from the diaspora, I was exposed to artists like Njideka Kwinyili Crosby, the painter who gave a talk there. This was around like 2015, probably. And I was so excited to see someone with a similar background to mine in this kind of hallowed art space and representing her hybrid narrative as a Nigerian American. And even she's a Nigerian American in a different way than I am, right? As someone who grew up there. But the way that she spoke about weaving her two cultures together, making her family, living in the US and kind of having this nostalgia for Nigeria, it really resonated with me. And so I remember she was one of my entry points into art. And Kehinde Wiley, you know, I think he was at a critical juncture in his career at the time, and I loved his work as well. And these African artists and diasporic artists are part of what got me interested in visual art and kind of delving deeper into visual art. And ever since then, there's been a conversation of back and forth between visual art and writing and now film, because my practice and my scholarship and my work has always been interdisciplinary. It's always focused on all these different forms of art. And at the moment, it's really kind of, I've kind of wanted to focus a bit more on a particular medium. But yeah, those are a few of the artists that really kind of inspired me.
You know, as you were saying so many things that had my mind sort of percolating. One, when you mentioned early on, your parents, you know, weren't really like super excited about you pursuing the arts. That's sort of like the reason, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast in the first place, because I remember there was a period when I was living and working in West Africa in Senegal. And I was working with different artists, and there was a woman artist, a young woman sculptor. And she was telling me about how she was making all this artwork. And when she wanted to go to college, she told her father and her family that she wanted to go to art school. And her dad was like, no. And he took her work and put it in the river.
Oh, God.
And I was like, dang, you know, like, and so I just thinking about how hard it is to be an artist, a woman, and to be an artist in many places of the world, you know, like just the to hear the words, I am an artist, come from women is like a revolutionary statement just in and of itself, you know?
Yeah.
And also because of what you were saying too, like, you know, how in schooling spaces, we don't get exposed to, you know, a wide range of artistic practitioners, you know, it's usually very Euro-centered, whitewashed curricula. And I experienced that too. It wasn't really until I went to college that I really started to become, you know, exposed to all the amazing, you know, Black scholars, Black artists who have like, it shaped my scholarship and my, just my life, you know? And so it's like, what would it be like if that could happen so much sooner? You know, like, why does it have to be that we have to wait until college to have those, that exposure? Why can't it be like in elementary school, middle school, high school? And what kind of impact might that have on us as young scholars and creatives, you know? So definitely a lot of that was resonating. You mentioned your interdisciplinarity, and I'm so fascinated with the work that you do across different mediums. You're curating, you're directing, you're writing, you're teaching, you're doing photography, installation, even painting. So I mean, I look at you as sort of someone who just likes to experiment and just like try different things. And so how does your artistic journey in and through your interdisciplinary studies influence your artistic practices? And how do these different disciplines intersect and inform your creativity?
I think the best way I can answer that is by saying that everything that I do is part of a kind of central thesis that's related to what I said before about how Africa is here now. Africa is not relegated to a distant past. Africa is not relegated to a distant geography. I want to attest to the presence of the African diaspora in relation to contemporary culture. And in many ways, I'm trying to tell my own story. I'm trying to assert that I am an African woman who is in the here and now. I'm in the here and now of American culture. I'm in the here and now of diaspora culture more broadly. I'm even in the here and now of Western culture, right? And I feel that when people conceive of Africa, that image that emerges, that pops into their head is so different from my lived experience. Granted, as someone who didn't grow up on the continent, but I think that my experience poses a challenge to that monolithic image of Africa in many ways. And so really in everything I'm doing, you know, I explained how I'm kind of trying to address this in my course, in my teaching. In my film, you know, part of why I wanted to make the film was because I wanted to see a Nigerian American family on screen. I haven't seen that. You know, I've heard whisperings of different projects that are popping up and starting to show that. And I think I have to say in independent filmmaking, independent diasporic filmmaking, that those kinds of narratives are emerging now. I can think of the filmmaker Tomisin Adepeju in London, who's putting the Nigerian diasporic family on screen from a British perspective, even though I know he identifies more with his Nigerian nationality for different reasons. And my friend actually in the NYU film program is a beautiful filmmaker, Ifeanyi Arinze, who is making films about the diasporic Nigerian family from the perspective of the strong women character. So these narratives are emerging, but in terms of the mainstream especially, I just wasn't seeing Nigerians, you know, in these diaspora contexts in the US having everyday experiences or having extraordinary experiences, like, you know, living at a time when reparations are now coming due. And so in all these different projects, I'm kind of approaching the same question from different angles and through different mediums. Sometimes, you know, when I get inspired to start one of these projects, whether it's, you know, curating an installation or writing a short story, which is also part of my writing practice, my intuition tells me, okay, this one needs to be a screenplay or this one needs to be a syllabus. And those different forms, right, have something valuable to offer to the way that I'm exploring this question and in the way that it can be received. They all have something valuable to offer to this constant pursuit and this constant exploration. So I do all of these things just to kind of take advantage of the different tools that they each offer.
You know, so one of my professors here at Teachers College, who is now at University of Southern California, my other alma mater, Dr. Christopher Emden, he talked about on he has this live that he does on Instagram. And he talked about one time how this idea that we had to be like, you know, do one thing,
right,
like that, if like a, you know, that phrase that people say, a jack of all trades, master, like that is like somebody whack who didn't have like lots of different skills, you know? And then I think about Catherine McKittrick, who writes about in Dear Science, she talks about interdisciplinarity as something that's very African, that's just sort of how we operate. Yes. You know, and so when I hear you talking, you know, I'm just like, you know, yeah, it's like, that's just kind of like how we are, like being stifled and told, you know, oh no, you need to like do one thing, you know, right, like these things feed each other. And,
absolutely,
you know, and you have choices. Like, why would we want to stifle or limit someone's choices or limit them from experimenting? We would miss out on all the different things that they have to offer, you know? So there's a lot of whack people out there who want to tell us like, you have to do one thing, but like, that just means that they don't have multiple literacies. They don't have like multiple capabilities. They're not like maybe multi-passionate, you know? And so I just love that you're just like an embodiment of that. So
thank you.
Thank you for existing.
Wow. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So in your scholarly writing, in a published article, you explore the role of oral histories in shaping cultural narratives. Can you talk about the role of oral histories in preserving and amplifying or visibilizing these marginalized voices?
Yeah, absolutely. In that article, I was really thinking about the live event, and I was curating live events a lot at the time. And I was thinking about how, you know, when those events don't necessarily focus on members of the dominant group, when those events, for example, are focused on Black women and African women and diasporic women, for example, they may not be archived in the same way as an event that's deemed more important because it's looking at the work and appealing to audiences of people who are deemed more important because they're white, male, or part of other dominant groups, right? Straight, et cetera. And so I was thinking about how after a kind of one-off event, like a festival or a talk or another kind of artistic program, such as the ones I've been putting together, Black women audiences talk about what they experienced. And they might like message their homegirls about what they saw. And they might write something about it. But in many cases, they're, you know, debriefing in conversations as they leave the venue, or they're having coffee after and they're talking about what they just experienced and witnessed together. And I started thinking about those as archives, important archives of these platforms for arts and creativity by Black women, African women, diasporic women. And so I really was fascinated by the idea of like the post-event conversation and the whispers and the WhatsApp messages that followed the events that I was curating. And I wanted to argue that, you know, that is where oral histories of these important events exist. And there's potential in the retelling, you know, of these experiences for those events to live on. And so I really have a lot of respect for kind of the post-event debrief or the post-event chat, the way that girlfriends talk after they go to an exhibition of African women's art, for example. And I do think that more resources need to be dedicated so that these events can actually be documented in an even more, let's say, lasting way, or a way that's able to be circulated on a broader scale. And I'm being careful not to say documented or archived in a proper way or even a permanent way, because I don't think that written documentation is inherently better, right, than Right, than oral histories. But I think one thing that written documentation does offer is the chance for these experiences to be shared at a larger scale. Yeah. And, you know, the power of these conversations that I'm talking about is their intimacy, but they don't necessarily offer that same inclusivity in terms of enfolding broader and broader kind of audiences, broader and broader communities into what happened at the event. So yeah, I think that as Black women artists, Black women art enthusiasts, we should just continue to talk to each other and among ourselves, record these events by sharing with each other what happened. And at the same time, I'm not saying that we can't also benefit from the materials and the resources to archive these events in other ways. But I did want to say that in the absence of those resources, archives do exist of these exhibitions, these screenings, these talks, et cetera.
Absolutely. And another area that's also overlooked, as I was hearing you talk, I'm thinking about digital landscapes like social media, because a lot of these conversations or, you know, engagements extend into the digital landscape. And a lot of times, you know, people, scholars aren't necessarily looking there. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, even this podcast, you know, Columbia University is really trying to support this idea around multimodal scholarship. And so like, you know, these episodes, these oral histories are part of, you know, because they selected this podcast for a partnership. And so like, it's going to be part of their archives, you know, and citable research, you know, with DOI numbers and things like that. So I love that.
So, that's wonderful, by the way, such a huge accomplishment.
Thank you so much. Well done. I'm so grateful, you know, to you for being a part of this.
Oh, I'm grateful to be here.
Especially before it like is actually out, because these first eight recordings I'm doing, you know, it's all behind the scenes, you know, but so you all are walking with me in this, taking this leap of faith with me, and I appreciate it. I'm very grateful.
It's a pleasure.
So I wanted to ask you about, so you've had these very amazing opportunities to travel and do residencies or fellowships in different countries. And I know how important that can be in the trajectory of an artist. And I was just wondering if you could speak to that, the role of these residencies, fellowships, how they have been an important factor in your artistic growth, and in a way that, you know, is encouraging to other women artists that they should pursue these opportunities, and also to people who are funding and creating those opportunities that they should keep doing that.
Well, okay. So two kind of international experiences come to mind. And actually the first was my trip to, or the first is my trip to Brazil in 2018, which was funded by the Arts Council of England. I went there for a week, and I went there because previously I had been invited to a conference in Colombia that was run by the former Minister of Culture and the first Black woman minister in that government, Paula Moreno. At her conference, I met the director of Feira Preta, which is the largest Afro-Brazilian gathering in Latin America. And it's a fair that also has a curatorial program of talks and live events. And the director, Adriana Barbosa, I met her in Colombia, and we talked about, you know, collaborating somehow in the future. And that got me interested in, of course, coming to see what she does with Feira Preta and to see how we could potentially work together. And so I was able to go to Brazil, to Sao Paulo in November of 2018, and just experience Feira Preta. And that trip was so enriching for so many reasons. I think the first thing that I took away from it that I think is important is the fact that Brazil is a Black country. You know, for all their efforts to paint it otherwise, that is a Black country. And the people that I spoke to, that I met, are also African in such a deep, beautiful, powerful way. I spoke to someone who on a Sunday was getting ready to go to, you know, like a spiritual, she was doing the equivalent of going to church on a Sunday, but she was going to practice, I believe, Yoruba spirituality.
Right.
And that was just so powerful to me that, you know, she was that in touch with her African heritage that it was an active part of her weekly life. Engaging with the spirituality in community with others was this active and everyday part of her weekly life, and but also like a special part of her regular life. And so since then, it's just been so clear to me that like we in the US, we across the diaspora, we need to know about Brazil. Like we need to be in community somehow with our counterparts there. When it comes to my teaching, I'm so convinced that anyone who's dealing with a diasporic cinema needs to grapple with Black Brazilian cinema as part of that. And sadly, I don't have Black Brazilian films on my syllabus. And I'm confident that as the course continues to evolve and as I continue to teach it, and as I teach other courses, I'll incorporate more. And actually, one of my dreams now, having TA'd for a Brazilian cinema course last spring, is to teach a Black Brazilian cinema course, or to teach a Brazilian course, right? Brazilian cinema class, but teach all Black Brazilian films. Because that is a majority Black country. And
the largest population of Black people outside of Africa.
Exactly. So I think there's a certain level of consciousness about that and a certain level of familiarity with Brazil and kind of our collective consciousness and a familiarity with Brazil as a Black country and that consciousness. But it needs to be explored even further. And, you know, this isn't even to talk of Brazilian activism. The incredible Marielle Franco, who was murdered right before I visited Brazil, who was not only a Black feminist activist, but a queer woman, a radical Black woman. And it's the fact that her sister is now in government and that now there's a head of Indigenous Affairs in Brazil, and that there's now, I believe, a Black vice president who's a woman, if I'm remembering that correctly. But yeah, there's incredible things happening politically in Brazil as well at the hands or by the hands of Black women. And so that trip just really put me in touch with this part of the diaspora, you know, this Portuguese speaking part of the diaspora that I had no connection to before, and just broadened my conception of like the borders of Africa and the Black diaspora. So that was super, super important. And I'm not even talking about the music I was exposed to through Feira Preta and the style and the way people had of relating to each other and, you know, the talks. I ended up being part of a panel there about, I think, like Black creativity in different mediums, something like that. And I think I went to a couple of other talks. So I'm not even doing the breadth of the event's kind of curatorial mandate justice. Mm-hmm. But that's the heart of what I took from it, is that we need to be contending with Brazil as people who say we're interested in Blackness in Africa. Yeah. And especially in Black diasporic creativity. Yeah.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that one of the greatest atrocities done to us as African diasporic people is this like illusion of separation that is created by these borders, you know, depending on the different places that we were, you know, our ancestors were placed, whether it be like here, Caribbean, Latin America, Brazil. And I love the idea of artists as being shepherds towards uniting the Black diaspora. And it's so true. We cannot, you know, Brazil is like one of the first and foremost places, you know, that we have to go, because there's so much history there. And there's a museum that I visited, Museu Afro-Brazil, created by the founder, Emmanuel Arujo, an artist who created the museum there in Sao Paulo. And I mean, it's just that museum. Oh my gosh. Honestly, I feel like every Black person, if they can, need to make a trip just to go and visit that museum, you know, because he tells the history, you know, and Brazil, the history is so complicated there, you know. I can't wait to talk to Brazilian artists. That's something I'm really looking forward to doing in the near future. But back to you. So moving towards my last couple of questions for you. So, you know, you are a student, a teacher, you know, an experimenter, a multidisciplinary like scholar. And so I was just wondering about how do you see your multidisciplinary practice evolving in the future? Are there any disciplines or mediums that you're eager to explore? How do you envision continuing to push the boundaries of your artistic practice?
Yeah, I appreciate this question, because this is something I've been thinking about too. And my answer is TV is the next frontier that I'm very interested in both my own writing work and creative work and also my teaching and research. I'm really interested in talking about Black women characters in TV. I'm very interested in talking about colorism as it affects Black women's representation in TV. I'm very interested in talking about how Black women, as I see it, and I'm very early in my thinking about this in a way, I mean, we've been seeing these kinds of narratives before forever, but I'm interested in how in queer Black women characters' story arcs, they're often positioned as the dominant person in the dynamic, the aggressor, the pursuer, even when that doesn't make narrative sense. And it's something that I keep seeing, and I feel crazy when I see it over and over. And so I feel like it needs to be talked about. And so I've been thinking about, trying to write an article about that and feeling like, you know, can I do that when the rest of my research is so different? I'm thinking about, you know, diasporic film and Nigerian women in film and Nigerian women filmmakers in my dissertation.
You absolutely can. You?
Right.
And I
right.
know you will.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So I would be super interested in writing about, yeah, Black women on TV and kind of thinking about these different questions. And then I'm really interested in writing for TV for kind of the same reasons. I would love to push back against some of the ways that I see Black women being written on TV with kind of my own take. And so even when I think about where I would like my film to go, I've said this a couple of times in different spaces, I would actually love to adapt it as a TV show. Also because the sociality around TV, the sociality that we have around TV, I think is so rich and like it's fertile ground for community, building community and enjoying each other as Black audiences. Of course, you can see a film many times, but there's something about sitting down in front of a TV show over and over again over time, yeah, and potentially, you know, gathering other people around you and discussing what happened and reacting as the show is on and talking again. It's these post-event conversations. It's talking about what happened in the episode later with, you know, other Black women. That practice is so satisfying to me. And being able to create that experience, particularly for audiences of other Nigerian American men and women and other people with the characters that I've created in my film, giving these audiences the chance to engage with these characters over time, mm-hmm, would be amazing, would be incredible. So those are a couple of my dreams at the moment.
Oh, I'm here for it and I can't wait.
Thank you.
I just went through the whole I was so late and I just went through Blackish, mm-hmm, and I now mm-hmm is like, I loved it so much. I like, I want to mm-hmm start all over again. You really do mm-hmm develop this relationship with the characters, yeah, and it could go on for years. So I think that's absolutely amazing and beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, so my last question for you is, mm-hmm, are there any specific lessons, experiences, mm-hmm, or advice that you feel have been particularly valuable to you, mm-hmm, that would be also for other women artists on their creative journeys?
I think about this a lot, and I wish I could remember who told me this. It was definitely a Black woman, but someone told me, focus on what you want, not what you don't want, and create more of what you want, not more of what you don't want. And that really guides me in a lot of ways, in ways I don't even often acknowledge. I'm actually surprised that it's what's coming up in this moment. And there's other, you know, bits of advice I could share, but this is what's really speaking to me right now, what feels like it needs to come out. Because what that means is, rather than, for example, only focusing on how negatively Black women are portrayed on TV, to speak to my last example or my last answer, it's important to also just create more of the representation that I want to see. It's not just criticizing, critiquing constantly, saying like, this is wrong and let's tear this show down because it's problematic, or, you know, picking apart, focusing on, dwelling on, and picking apart like what we don't want. It's also about creating more of what we want. And so in everything I do, I try not to just critique. I try not to center the negative. I try not to center, even in my own life, I try not to center, for example, racism. I try not to even center, I try not to center anti-Blackness. Instead, I really try to think, okay, all of this is going on. All of this negative stuff is going on. Where's the good? Where can I find what I actually want to see? Where are the experiences I had where I was in joyful community with other Black people? And how can I center those in my memory of this day, where I also experience racism, for example, as an example of a personal practice. And then when it comes to my work and you know, research and writing and teaching and making films and curating, I'm always trying to acknowledge that the stuff we don't want is out there, but focus on creating, producing, sharing more of what we actually want and just centering what we actually want. Because we can critique all day and complain all day about the stuff we don't want, but where do we finally get what we do want?
I think I needed to hear that today. So thank you. I definitely needed to hear that today because it's a practice, you know, because it's hard, you know, because there's so much that we have to deal with and that bothers us, you know, but it's true, you know, focusing on the joy and focusing on, because those are also very real. And those are where we are actually being, you know, who we are. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yes. So this was so lovely. Thank you so much for your time today, Ifeanyi. I'm just like, you know, this was an amazing conversation. Yeah. I just so excited to follow your journey now.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Thank you for your questions. It was great to reflect and talk with you. And I'm glad we met. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yes, yes. Now we're linked up. So we're in this together now.
Right.
Well, you go and have a lovely day. And I'm so excited about your class this summer. I'm probably going to reach out to you at the end of the summer just to see how it went. But I know you're going to have a blast. Your students are so lucky.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure speaking with Ifeanyi Awache and learning about her incredible journey as an artist and scholar. Her diverse body of work across different mediums, including painting, installation, and photography, is truly inspiring. Be sure to tune in next time for more engaging conversations. Until then, take care. Thank you for joining us on this enlightening expedition through the world of women artists from the Global South and its diasporas. We hope you've been inspired by the stories shared and perspectives explored. Remember, beauty knows no bounds and creativity thrives in every corner of the globe. Keep seeking out the voices that challenge, uplift, and redefine our understanding of art and culture. Until next time, stay curious, stay open-minded, and continue to explore the beauty that lies beyond beauty.